Hi, this is Neil Stavem. Thanks for checking out the podcast of Connecting Faith. Programs like this are made possible through the financial support of listeners like you. You can find out more or make a gift by clicking on the Support Faith Radio tab on the homepage. Enjoy the podcast.
Always expect something good on your lunch hour. Connecting Faith with Life.
Welcome to Connecting Faith. Looking forward to spending some time talking about a very important subject, and one that I hope you'll find intriguing, particularly if you have any involvement in business, and most of us do at some level, and you have a heart for sharing the gospel. We'll see how those two can relate. We're going to talk today with Dwight Nordstrom, who is the chairman of PRI, and it's a holding company for manufacturing investment in China. And Dwight has spoken and written a lot about his work in China. He's been working there for 20-plus years. We used to hear the term tent making, and now there's an acronym that sounds like something out of wrestling called BAM. Mm-hmm. Dwight, let's talk about what BAM is.
Sure. Good morning, by the way. Business's mission is really a subset of tent making. In the past, we looked at all the people going to the unreached parts of the world, the Islamic world, the Chinese-speaking world, the linguistic world, ethnolinguistics of India, and went there with multinationals. What we found, even though we were excited in the 70s and 80s with up to a million Americans working in those countries, was that when the company itself really had no interest in seeing faith communicated, typically people were relegated to expatriate, you know, non-national compounds living. They weren't really able to touch base and with the nationals and see churches started. And until churches are started, really missions doesn't see the full cycle be developed. So the entrepreneurship of many of us said, how do we actually accomplish this? Get to the place we want to be there for as long as we want. And one of the ways is doing business as mission. So it's not just business alone. Even though business gives dignity to people, you give them jobs, creativity opportunities, educational opportunities, but it's with an intentionality to also share the name of Jesus with these people who've not had a chance to hear. And what I focused on is setting up mid-sized companies. So I've been part of about 40, of which about half of those we've had an equity investment, companies ranging from employment up from 30 up to 700. And though we've done stuff in Central Asia, our primary focus has been unreached cities of China. And we do technology companies. China right now has over 200 cities with more than a million people. The U.S. only has 9. And about 100 of those cities are what we call highly unreached, which a quick definition is less than 1% of the people are Christian. Several of my recent startups, my first 100-plus employees, not one had ever seen a Bible, So that's not a postmodern world. It's a pre-Christian world. And typically in the process, we'll see within the first 2 years up to maybe 20% of our technology force come to the point of a crisis of belief and saying, hey, this Christianity thing that these leaders show in our operation really makes a difference, and I'm gonna experience Jesus.
So this is you kind of answered the question, I guess, but you said from 30 to 700 employees or so.
Mm-hmm.
This is a few people in leadership that that come with the intentional faith to share. So it doesn't mean that all the employees.
Oh
have
no,
faith that, you know, so this is not an enclave.
Typically, 95%+ of my new employees. I mean, I've hired probably 10,000 employees in the last 20 years of my operations. Would never even seen a Bible. So they really have no conception of who Jesus is. They've just never seen. They've never had the opportunity. Of that, I would be intentional in hiring two that would be Christians. And then I also try and bring in at least two non-nationals from, you know, Israel, Western Europe, the U.S., Canada, who would also share the faith. They would not necessarily be the general manager of the operation, but they'd be in some level of maybe second layer leadership And from an ethics standpoint, you need that to sort of get the ball rolling at these operations.
You know, as long as we're talking, I guess, you know, mid-sized businesses, mm-hmm. and that's one of the things that you have sort of focused on, so that, you know, there's one thing to do sort of, I guess, the entrepreneurial startup, you know, one or two right. people coming in, but you're saying there's a significant place for that, that mid-sized or even larger business.
You know,
as mission.
What happens is, okay, people, Western Christians, missionaries, that have wanted to go to these countries, have seen businesses welcomed. And most of them have said, well, hey, let me just start up a sole proprietorship, a one or two person operation. Those operations, the statistics unfortunately say up to 90%+ within the first 5 years disappear. They're not viable businesses. Our model has been, we always want to partner with a technology company. Most of our technology partners are not Christian, but, they're world-leading companies. They're number one or number two in their particular niche industry. I mean, like, we're the largest medical stent manufacturer in China today, working for third parties. Our specialty chemicals business, number one or number two. I sort of can go on and on. Our mobile phone antenna business, et cetera, that we started. And so we basically take world-class product, world-class technologies, and in either sales, marketing, sourcing, some manufacturing, seek to implement that in one of these unreached cities. And we have our threshold or our barrier to entry to competitors is pretty significant, because we've got a technology partner who's doing well. And so that's been a pretty dynamite situation. You know, just to give, I know Bain Capital with Romney's been on the news and things. We're not classic an investment bank or private equity. We're actually engineers, operational people, but in those that we've invested, about 20, 25, we've shut down about four, but we've had some real nice successes with almost all the others and are quite good viability.
Well, and as I understand it, we'll talk about China, and we'll kind of come back and talk more about China. I'm going to step back to the bigger picture, too, but I know that China has been looking at the West to say what are the keys to their success, and that they see this, I guess what we call maybe the Protestant work ethics, as something to pursue. So there's an openness, I assume, right?
Yeah. China's looking to – they're very pragmatic. Yeah. They know they have to be competitive. They know they have to accept standards and quality initiatives, Sigma Six, that will allow them to be, you know, top of the class. The world, particularly in manufacturing, is very competitive. I mean – An example would be, we make in one of our sister companies now, but we started the company, have about 700 employees. We're typically 40 to 50% worldwide market share for Samsung for mobile phone antennas. So we'll make 10 to 12 million antennas a month at various times. There is no number four. I mean, they'll have a second supplier that may make 25% and a third supplier that make 15%, but there is no fourth or fifth or sixth place. Either you're in the top three or you're out. And the difference between that third and fourth place is, you know, very small, but it's all the difference in the world. So if you know, most of my employees coming in, their standard is if it's okay to lie, as long as they're not caught. But that's simply to get to making 1 million parts and only having less than four defects, Sigma Six standards, or even at worst, Sigma Five. You know, 1 in 20. We've got to tell them, no, the lie, you can't lie at all. There is no place for that. We call it red eye sickness in China, Hongyanbing. Jealousy is a huge issue. And so high performers, top performers, typically in communist systems are dragged down. If we want to be world class, we need those top performers, those inventors, those guys that tweak our manufacturing cell process to be just a little bit better. Otherwise, we're out. So these incremental steps, and so we have to teach an ethics that says don't covet. Well, I've just mentioned two of the last five of the Ten Commandments. I tell my managers, my GMs and others that come in from other countries, China's a great place. The people are wonderful. But in general, it's a place where leadership is not commended by those underneath. Typically, you just talk about your managers in a bad. I mean, it's self-criticism. It's a critical society, and I tell them you've got to, and this whole issue of, you know, do not kill. Well, Jesus talks about talking bad about someone else and with murdering your heart. And so, you know, we teach that you've really got to respect the human dignity of people. And so I think created in God's image is a wonderful beginning point for those that want to do world competitive business. And so, yeah, I do think the Judeo-Christian values are wonderful, frankly, competitive advantages. For those that that want to do successful business in the world.
Well, we're getting some perspective on business and business as mission with Dwight Nordstrom. Dwight's chairman of PRI, and he's written and spoken and led in many ways in this whole area of how we can live out our faith in the marketplace in some strategic ways. And we're going to continue our conversation with Dwight in just a moment here on Connecting Faith. Dwight Nordstrom joins us here on Connecting Faith today. He's chairman of PRI, and it's a holding company with manufacturing investments in China. He's got a number of years' experience working in China and the Asia Rim. And we're talking about business as mission. And, Dwight, one of the things that I was reading one of your articles here recently just caught my attention, that it never really occurred to me that, you know, while business itself accomplishes a mission, I mean, that it really, it's not just enough to have a sort of a platform where I can interact and share with a local community, but it really, there's some value in business. In fact, lifting people out of poverty or helping them out, right?
Oh, absolutely. You know, listen, God is honored when people have enough to eat, when they have educational opportunities for themselves and their children, when the natural creative processes, abilities that God's given us just flourish and develop. Our businesses are typically 30 to 50 employees up to 500 plus, and they're technology based and they're world leading competitive based in the medical device area, in the telecommunications area. And when you give people, engineers, a chance to express that, you know, work is meaningful. God gave us work, and you know, there was work before the fall. So having resources is a good thing. Now, it doesn't stop there. You give a cup of cold water, but in this case, give a cup of a great business opportunity, but in the name of Jesus. And it's at the appropriate time when that comes. You know, when this sort of the fake businesses, or you say just the platforms, you know, really that just takes business and makes it such an unrobust incarnation of what God gave work to be. I mean, work is to be productive. If you want to get men and women to be discouraged, well, tell them to dig a ditch and then the next day fill it up, dig a ditch the next day. I mean, you know, Frankel and others talked about this as a curse when work is non-productive, when we sow the field and it's not productive. And so you want to give meaningful, productive work that gives, just really, you know, you're enabled by it. We give, basically very well-paying jobs. My experience when people just fake the business, well, first of all, their platform, they're not able to stay there long-term. Secondly, although they may initially attract, I mean, our company, we attract the best and the brightest. And the people who are the best and brightest oftentimes are the most curious and are most open then to the gospel. And those are the change agents within society. And those that are smart, basically, if you're fake, they'll quickly realize that and they won't keep coming back to you. They'll say, there's not anything here. Our typical experience is, you know, 95% of our workers have never seen the Bible, have had really no contact with any Christians. We particularly go to unreached cities of a million or more. We're less than 1%. And, well, it's normally well below that statistic. Normally it's like, you know, 0.03 type of things. And we start these mid-sized companies. Typical investment is $2 to $10 million with a technology partner. And we get after it. And typically we'll see within the first 2 to 3 years from 0 to about 20% really come to a point of, hey, you know, Jesus is a viable, reasonable answer to my life's questions.
I was wondering too if it's maybe more challenging to get in as a business person in a China, for example, when they're raising up their own they're training up their own employees and the people so that there's as many skilled workers there. So it's not, you know, you really have to have something to offer, don't you?
I mean, hey. The business is competitive. Yeah. If you're not top of the top, you're out. And frankly, I thrive on competition, and I think business does. But, you know, I mean, recently China has changed. I think my first factory there was 1983. And in a licensee, and I've done Benpowder about 40 now. I've been a general manager of 10 factories in China. And I will say in general, from 1983 to 2007, it was getting easier to do business in China on a year-by-year basis, with probably one small hiccup in 97, 98. We call it the Asian monetary crisis. But at the end of 2007, China really started to make some changes I think have not been beneficial. Regulatory, legal, the support financially of some of the state-owned companies. I think China has made some unfortunate steps backwards regarding government involvement and the business side. But in that process, still, our business has done well. It just is we understand the competitive landscape's changed a little bit.
When you say we, is this you, and we're going to get to your story in a little bit too, because that'll help us. But
sure.
Is this you and a group of investors that said we want to use business at a higher platform to get in to share the gospel, or was it just you happen to be part of PRI? And
well, you know, I was called. Thanks. Now we sort of get into the personal story a little bit. My life is I grew up in the South Side of Chicago in a neighborhood that had a massive racial change from Irish Catholic to about 90% black. I learned to live as minority. My parents were basically wonderful Christians. And when I was 11 in church at a what historically Swedish-speaking church on the south side of Chicago, had met several missionaries, and I was 11, and God over a time period just said, and I remember very distinctly, I want to be a missionary when I grow up. Well, I asked myself for the next 8 years what type of missionary. When I was 15, I got my pilot's. I passed my private's test. I got that before I got my driver's sort of test. And then, you know, missionary pilot. And then people say, hey, wait a second, you're a little bit smarter. Why don't you study medicine? And looked at that. But then when I was 19, God changed my question from what type of missionary to understanding unreached people groups, unreached cities. And he said, Dwight, I'm calling you to assist the Chinese Christians in getting the word out to the Chinese Christians. And then additionally, we've done some startups in Islamic countries. So it was not to what type of missionary to, I'm calling you to the unreached people groups and unreached cities. And that's what, you know, I've been focused on. Now, my whole pilgrimage has been in business. My first 7 years were in multinationals. I was a divisional head for General Electric in China. But in 1990 was really a turning point where I said, I probably better become an entrepreneur. Because at that point, I mean, frankly, we're doing great. Our whole group together had $500 million in revenue. But then I was asked, well, why don't you go to GE Capital in the UK? It's like, no, I'm really here. And to really drive focused on specific cities, I said, I've got to become an entrepreneur. So in 1990, put together some funds. And when I say we, I've got a great team, a great core team of leadership. We've been able to raise capital internally as a general statement. And then our technology partners also participate. So we, in our typical structure, is we're a minority equity holder, typically 25% to 40%, with the majority owner being an Israeli or U.S. company. Most of them do not share our Christian expression values, but they really respect what we've done. And I think one of our real incentives is now in 19 years of partnerships, we've never had a partner, international partner, ask us to leave them. And that, I think, comes about like a good marriage. You learn how to get along and how to sometimes just say, okay, you want it this way, we'll follow that way.
Sure. I suspect you maybe have a thought or two about, I guess, the modern missionary movement and the need to raise support and some of the things that this is actually a legitimate way for you to, you can be what God has called you to be without having to, you know, do years of deputation, those kinds of things?
Our people, just to say, first of all, I think that the kingdom of God is big. And the variety of the point is there are way too many people who have never had even one chance, a reasonable chance to hear the gospel. So I am very happy in whatever, you know, authentic fashion that people come in to go to these unreached cities of China, the unreached people groups of India, or the unreached countries of the Islamic world. I think that a lot of people just have not thought through how we can do this in such a way that, I mean, we're welcomed any place. Hey, our company was asked to go into, when we set up a stent factory in China, North Korea knew about it. This is in the early 2000s. And they offered us the holy phone. I mean, they gave us the approvals if we wanted. We just said at the end of the day we couldn't make it work. And there was some laser cutting technology that, frankly, we would probably not have gotten approved as an export license. But, you know, even the most difficult places, Saudi Arabia, they welcome world-class business. But you've got to get the right resources, right capital, the right technology, and the right people in place.
And when you... So at the end of the day, what's success for you in terms of, is it you had an opportunity to make a one-on-one encounter or share just a biblical principle or?
Well, let me do that. You know, the nice thing is because I'm not a standalone tent maker. I mean, our company, PRI, is committed to this. I can answer that in two ways. As an individual, when I'm walking in the Spirit, it is a daily opportunity to specifically share my faith. Yeah, it is. I come back to the U.S. and frankly, it's tough here because you're thinking about what are people responding. But my workers, my mission field is my fellow employees, it's my customers, and it's my suppliers. That's where I see my fruit. It's not the sort of ad hoc, haphazard meeting a fruit vendor on the street. That may happen, but it is really just working with my employees, my suppliers, and my customers. And that's, I mean, I do work an average 10 hours a day. And my wife might tell you I work more than that at times. it's daily opportunity. Now, at a corporate level, we measure things on a yearly basis, and we like to see at least one or two Bible studies planted every year at every location. So that would be a corporate metric that we would typically, and there's some other benchmarks we have.
Interesting discussion. We want to spend a little time talking a bit about China particularly and just some of the unique things there. One of the things before we go to break, you mentioned, appropriate time. Talk about maybe what that appropriate time looks like maybe as you've developed it over the years for just sharing a bit more about faith.
Sure. Well, you know, our employees, when they come, let's talk about values. Let's take the last five of the Ten Commandments. Our employees think that stealing is okay as long as you're not caught. Lying is okay as long as you're not caught. Talking bad about somebody to break them down, sort of killing as Jesus describes it, okay, if it's a norm. Being covetous, we call it red eye sickness, the jealousy of high performers. Well, that's accepted. And then basically it's, I call it the Clinton lie, but, that your moral ethics outside of the workplace have no impact on your work. And as an employer now of about 10,000 employees over the last 25 years, I'll just say, no one can tell from my inductive experience a person's moral behavior outside of the workplace has an enormous impact on their work performance long term in the company. And I think these are great, the Christian values. Do not lie. Do not steal. Do not be jealous of other people. Reward high performers. Don't talk bad about other people. Kill people. Live a good moral lifestyle in and outside of the workplace. That consistency. Those are great values that get you ahead, economically, in technology. And so I get the chance to hear my workers typically within about 6 months. And let's just talk about, so I'm typically the general manager. So my line two and my line three workers, these would be my indirects. Typically they're master's degree people, 30 to 45. Within about 6 months, they would have heard these things and they would have encountered what I call a crisis of belief because they encounter a time where they just simply, Dwight, I can't do it. Why do I do this? But I know it's working for you. And then I see another Christian from another culture also sharing this because we typically have three different cultures within our company. How can I have the power to actually now follow this? And so that's a typical process that we see. It's not, I mean, normally they're very cautious coming in. And, I had one factory, 50% of my workers were Communist Party members, which, technically should be non-theist or atheistic. But coming to the point of saying, hey, the world, there is a spiritual world. There is a world of these values that are not only unique, but they're universal. And so that just because the new leadership says we're going to change to now this is our new theory, this is our new way of operation, no, these values are from God and it's the character of God.
Dwight Nordstrom is the chairman of the PRI. We're talking about sharing Christ through a strategy of business, and particularly in China. And we're going to hear more about what's going on in China in just a few moments here. You're listening to Connecting Faith. You're listening to Connecting Faith. I'm Neil Stavem. Happy to have with me in studio today Dwight Nordstrom. Dwight's chairman of the PRI. And Dwight has been involved in developing business in China for, is it about 20 years now?
Going on 28 years.
And has a number of significant businesses that they're partnering with, making a significant impact and having an opportunity to share faith along the way, business as mission. And Dwight has written and spoken much about that and has some good opinions and ideas and insights we're gleaning from that. But we want to focus a bit on China because I just saw a report, in fact, just the other day that now 51% of China's population now live in cities. Mm. And you're working in the world of sort of manufacturing and technology. How is China changing, and how is maybe your opportunities in business to share Christ there changing as well?
Well, you know, my first factory was 1983 in China, and that was just a few years after Deng Xiaoping. At that point, the senior leader of the party basically started economic reforms. And you're right. I mean, 86% of the people at that point, 86% were living in rural areas, farms, small villages. We've had now in 27 years, we've had close to 400 million people, you know, well more than the population of the U.S. move from the rural areas to the urban areas. I say that my workforces, typically one third of my workforce has an engineering background, so it's over 1,000 people, engineering background or some, you know, they're graduate students in some other topic. So a highly educated workforce. And I say that they're my three first. So they're first generation urbanites. Their parents lived in the farm. Now I gotta, you know, and just think about, you know, in your own family backgrounds, those that are listening, you know, when did my relatives move from the farm to the city? And what were the implications for that? I mean, so they're first generation urbanites. They're first generation college grads. Their parents did not experience college and all the education, what that means. And they're first generation capitalist. Their parents were in communes, so they never had examples of how do you be a world class. I mean, I had some wonderful mentors, my dad being foremost from a business. He was a wonderful business leader. And then within my church, I had guys that took me in my wing. And then, frankly, in the professional world, my time at GE had some great senior leadership. Not all those guys were Christians, but they were fantastic business people and thinkers. And so these first generation college grads, first generation urbanites, first generation capitalists are asking, I mean, they're just, think about that. They're asking, how do I become successful in this new situation that my family background has given me very little how to deal with that? Today, you know, one of the, and from a business perspective, you're looking at China's now the world's second largest economy. People talk about, well, Dwight, are your businesses taking jobs away from the U.S.? And we've seen just the opposite. I mean, most of my, you know, 10 businesses manufacturing with one media, large media group, we give actually more, the revenue is actually the other way. I get profits in China and bring it back to the U.S. where it's taxed. Wish it wasn't, but it's taxed.
Yeah. That's a whole other discussion.
That's a whole other discussion here. But there's now over 200 cities in China with more than 1 million population. To put that compared to the U.S., the U.S. has 9 cities like that. And of those 200 cities in China, over about 100 of those have a Christian population of less than 1%. And when we're talking about not being Christian, we're not talking about that the rabid Islamist, they're rabid animists, they're rabid Buddhists. We're talking about people that basically are pre-Christian. They have simply never heard in any reasonable context who Jesus is. And they are open. They are open to Jesus. I mean, we've seen it's been God, and it's been the efforts primarily of the Chinese, but you know, we've seen Christians probably in the last 25 years going from 10 million, and no one knows the exact number now, and even to possibly as much as 100 million, you know, plus or minus 20% of that number. And that's just remarkable. You know, in essence, China, from a number standpoint, you know, it's still in the single digits percentage-wise of Christians in China. So it's under 10%. And what's amazing is those that aren't Christians, most have never heard about who Jesus is. Now, of that, what you have, though, in China is vast pockets where they just simply haven't heard. So there's a great unequal distribution of where the Christians are in China today.
Well, I think we've heard that among the, maybe the urban professionals, the intellectuals, that there's some more openness there. It's been maybe rural house churches before, but now maybe because they're moving.
Definitely. Yeah. I think the move, you know, the growth in the church, and you know, we do have one of our divisions. So most of our divisions, we manufacture using special materials, world-class devices, medical stent components, specialty chemicals, corrosive materials, RF, radio frequency devices. But we do have a division which is now considered the largest Christian publishing group. We have about 50, 60 employees. You know, are in seven figures in terms of revenue, in terms of books sold. Also do a lot of special projects. And the data we get from there is that sort of this third wave now has gone from the growth in the rural church to now the growth of what we'd call house church or unofficial meetings within the urban setting.
Yeah. What is, I guess maybe, how can we be most effective in supporting kind of the work that you're doing? Is it a need for literature? Is it need? I mean, where are you?
Thanks. Help. Well, first of all, I think hopefully more than anything else, if this interview can help people, it's in some way you, your parents, your kids are involved in business, and you know, business is what most of us who are urbanites work in. And if you can ask yourself the question, I mean, we do business as missions. We intentionally do world-class business, so we have to stay competitive. We get no financing from any nonprofit sources, so we certainly don't want money. We couldn't take it. I don't want it because it would make me sloppy in my selection of businesses. But simultaneously, hopefully it helps you to challenge too. In your workplace, are you looking at how to basically take these competitive, world-class competitive values of Judeo-Christianity and implement them in the workplace where you're working? Now, if you're an owner, if you're just being quiet on your faith, I think that's hurtful to your economic bottom line. And I don't think that's what the standard that Jesus set forward. I think we do have to be intentional in our sharing. So hopefully the first is use a model and say, how can it affect me? Secondly, if your businesses are looking to expand, and for most businesses to be successful, and you've got more than 50 employees, you've got to look probably. I mean, unless you're in a restaurant area or something like that, you've got to look overseas as potential businesses. In Minneapolis, St. Paul, while Minnesota, wonderful technology companies. We have several partnerships here in the city and in the medical area, in the industrial automation area. So as you look to implement that in China, think through, you know, what how are you going to go to people with a blank slate, basically, and perform well? Well, I suggest that you come with what you've learned and say, hey, this is the Word of God, and this can make a difference and help us be more successful in it. So be thinking that way. I also encourage people to think about longer-term careers. Please don't just have a six-month or a one-year. I mean, the non-nationals, the Americans that I hire for our company, I want them to have, you know, working proficiency in Chinese. Or if you're going to go to an Islamic country, you know, get the language and consider, you know, a 5 to 10 year type of window for that. The most successful people and partnerships happen long-term. And you know, it's that's when the things really start rolling.
So when you have opportunity to speak to maybe students, say at Northwestern College or Bethel or Wheaton mm-hmm. or Biola, what do you say to them in the business departments?
Well, I have, by the way. I mean, all those I haven't spoken at Bethel, but you know, I also, frankly, I speak at Harvard. I've spoken at Kellogg, you know, Stanford, and those places they typically ask me to come and speak on venture capital, or in some engineering aspect. You know, but then the students, typically, will say, "Well, what drives you?" Yeah. And I say it's cultural change, and they ask, and well. You know, how do you determine that? And many of them come from a relativistic standpoint saying, you know, look, all ways are the same. And my response is, that's fine. But the reason I'm able to do stuff better than 95% of other companies is because I have values that can be successful. And frankly, it's a real challenge to them. But I had a group from, Cornell. Cornell was their EMBA. So average group, I mean, 40 guys. I think there was one Christian among 40. These are mid-level executives. They had about a two-week time. They went to, you know, United Technologies, GE, Dow Chemical, and they came to one of our factories. They saw the smorgasbord. Their response at the end of our meeting was, you're the only one of all these other companies that have talked about building cultural values. And as we've toured your factory, seen your workers, seen your implementation, our gut feeling is that you are going to be more successful than these other companies in raising up leadership. One of the statistics when I measure my general managers in our operations is they've got to have, looking at a comparison, an apples-to-apples of other wholly foreign-owned entities in that area, they've got to have an unwanted departure rate, so where the employees leave for somebody else, of less than half of what the rate is for these other companies. And so we metric that, and we reward them. And we've been pretty successful. And I mean, this is not like a 10% difference, but we're basically less than half of the unwanted departures. And frankly, the human resource issue in China today is probably the number one issue. There's a tremendous market opportunities. You know, capital in general is readily available. Cost of capital is reasonable. You know, technology is typically accessible, but now it's how do you attract and retain the best people? And that determines the winners and the losers. And we think we have a formula that helps in that.
Dwight Nordstrom is my guest. He's chairman of PRI. It is a holding company for manufacturing investments in China, and he's got nearly 30 years' experience working in his business's mission. And we're going to continue with Dwight just a moment. Dwight Nordstrom is my guest as we talk business as mission. And Dwight, I'm interested in just maybe we wrap up our time, a couple of stories. What happens in a company where there's you know, maybe 100 employees or so, and you start up a Bible study and group, and there's some that come to faith? What does that do in terms of maybe transforming the business or impacting the business and the community beyond that? Just give us a few stories.
Sure. Well, let me give you a current one. So it's right now late January of 2012, and about a year ago, our company was tasked under sort of a turnkey management contract to start a new operation that takes zirconium, titanium, about six different metals, and turn those into what's called liquid metal, which is all metal, like all wood, has grain structures. It's a place upon which you can have fractures. So it's good and it's bad. Wood can splinter. This actually takes metal and turns it into a glass-like substance. It's an amorphous metal, so there's no structure to it. Well, this technology, this is the only place in the world. So we started an operation. There's no other factory doing this. There's some prototype labs, but that's it. This came out of University of California. And so I was tasked, so I was employee number one. I was a GM, and about a year ago. This is in a city we found 2 million people, and there's two open churches. Less than 1% Christian in the city, so we went after it. So I brought in a Chinese man in his 50s as my HR manager who was a Christian, and that was the only Christian I brought in the operation, and him and me. Now we're up to about 70. And by the way, the technology challenges in this are enormous. I have to melt the stuff over 1,000 centigrade. I got yield issues, but I've now got four customers. And so this is world-leading technology. It's, you know, big 100-ton die press machines that are 4 meters, 4.5 meters tall. I've got 9 of them. And making this product that's really in production currently no other place in the world. Well, we've now seen over 25 of my first 66 employees. There was one other employee I hired who was a Christian. That was it. No one else, no one had ever seen a Bible. We have about 25 now that meet on Wednesday night for like an Alpha-like class. So this is a pre-Christian introductory meeting. We've seen quite a few become Christians. Tuesday night, we actually teach Korean. So we bring in a Korean speaker because this is across the water from South Korea. Thursday nights, we bring in English classes. So we've got 3 nights of classes. They're volunteer classes for the workers. Frankly, we get a very good percentage that attend. These people want to improve their lives, and they want to improve their opportunities, and they see that. It's been great. One of the interesting things is one of the people, one of my key technical people, who's been with me in 2 other operations, MBA, strong engineering background, early 40s. He's always resisted now for about 8 years. When he's here in the startup, he recently became a Christian. Just the Lord worked in his life. It's been wonderful. So we do have to have a little different sort of strategies for how to get the direct production line workers, because a lot of them work in a very close to these furnaces, and then also a lot of polishing work that's done and sandblasting. So how we try and get – we have to typically put a Christian we found close to them. And then the indirects, I have about 12 indirects that just sort of – in an office environment, it's very easy to communicate your faith. Yeah. So that's an example. We've now and we've now got – we're actually one of the open churches here. We've got several people now working with them as well. Some really interesting stories. Let me give you just one there. Yeah. So – this is most of my facilities I build and own because I like to have my own facility, my own building, 100,000 square feet, whatever. This was about a 50,000 square foot facility and our first rental, and I had to rent it. And they had 5 flagpoles out in front. You know, we have our own facility, old guard, and I'm like, what am I gonna? So I put up the Chinese flag, I put up the U.S. flag because we're a U.S. company, I put up the PRI flag, and then I put up a liquid metal flag. So for the first 5 months, this 5th flagpole was empty. And I'm like scratching my head. What do I do? Finally, I said, you know, I've never done this after 25 years in China. I'm going to put up the Christian flag. Well, within 24 hours, the police came. So the police are there, but I'm a multimillion-dollar investor in this. I'm the only U.S. investor in this entire industrial park. There's about 45 companies in this industrial park. And the police said, that's a Christian flag. You got to take it out. I said, well, how do you guys know it's a Christian flag? They said, we know it's a Christian flag. You're not a church. You got to take it down. I said, I'm not taking it down. It represents the values of our company. They said, no, you got to take it down. I said, I'm not taking it down. So I was sort of, you know, playing with them. But after about an hour, I said, look, bring in the economic zone. So the economic zone comes in. They don't want to get rid of this we're wanted in this place desperately. But the police are there, and the police are saying, and they've got control. What they say, you got to do. So basically, finally, we came up with, and it took about 2 days through a lot of thing. I said, look, here's what I'll do. I'll take it down, but I'm going to put up the Swiss flag, the flag of Switzerland's got a big cross in the middle. And they said, well, that's the flag of Switzerland. That's fine. I said, no, it represents my company's values, and so my workers know why I do it. You know, that these are values that we want to express in our company, and yet it's also the flag of Switzerland. So that's an example. You work it out. Basically the government's very pragmatic. They want tax-paying revenue. We're good taxpayers. And that's another reason why you're going to do valuable business and not just fake business.
Dwight, is there a verse or a passage or maybe a biblical character or story that you kind of sort of keep coming back to and say, this is sort of at my core, this is why I'm doing what I'm doing?
You know, you always have to incarnationalize Scripture. So if you're asking me my favorite Bible character, without question, it's Daniel, because Daniel was able, through unjust and just circumstances, through multiple governments and kingdoms, was able to survive and was a man of integrity. But, you know, from the Apostle Paul, sometime, you know, it appears on that second missionary journey when he went from Asia Minor, from Turkey, and he went over to Greece. It seemed like, you know, 1 Corinthians 9 is a great section where he talks about now. I mean, I don't think he supported himself primarily through tent making in all three of his journeys. But I think that second journey when he went to Greece, you know, that's a great passage in Corinthians there, dealing with, you know, he was worked with his hands day and night, then preached on Sunday. You know, he was certainly an entrepreneur, but I would say Priscilla and Aquila, you know, probably had just the three or four of them, maybe a few more. I would just encourage in the international world today business, though we need the small soul entrepreneurships, really I think the highly untapped area is owners or significant leaders of mid-sized U.S. technology companies as they seek to incarnationalize their business, to expand their business into the worlds of the Islamic worlds, the unreached cities of China and India, which are great markets, particularly China and parts of India. Understanding that your Christian faith is not a stumbling block, but it's actually an incredible core of who you are. And as you seek to replicate your values as a company, to have that operation not be a dumb terminal that simply takes purchase orders, because you're going to die that way as a company. You need a company that's has thinkers, critical thinkers, that access local markets, that modify product to meet local market needs, you know, using local sources of supply, developing new patents. Most of our operations are one-third to one-fourth engineers, and by year three, we start rolling off patents. We start rolling off intellectual property trade secrets. We may choose not to patent it, but we keep these industrial trade secrets in our company. And, you know, we grow up to be an adult alongside our technology partner from the U.S. to Western Europe. And just that is a real strength. And it's not I think, again, everything's general. You know, the Western European model of relativism and never sharing your faith, I think, is not a very robust model, particularly in China, because the values workers are going to bring are going to not cause you to reach world-class quality levels.
I was thinking about 1 Corinthians 9, I think it's New Living Translation, talks about, you know, Paul said, I run straight to the goal with purpose in every step.
That's right.
And that's, I think, as we've spent some time getting to know Dwight, you would say that's your pattern.
Well, thank you. I've had my life's challenges, my family tragedies, but I am so grateful that God, you know, when I was 11, in their local church in Chicago, led us, you know, missionaries to come, and just he made that call, and then frankly, that's what, you know, my life's been focused on. But again, business is what's such a wonderful way to do it.
Dwight Nordstrom from PRI is joining us today and sharing what God's given him the opportunity to do, and a challenge for all of us. Dwight, great to visit with you. Thanks so much.
Neil, God bless you. Thank you so much.
And a reminder, you can hear this full interview and share the podcast with friends by going to our website. It's faithradionet.com, faithradionet.com. You can click on the Connecting Faith show page. You can also find out more about Dwight Nordstrom and PRI by doing a Google search. It seemed like the easiest way to find out more about the vast experience Dwight has in business. Dwight Nordstrom, PRI. And you'll find some interesting stories and background about Dwight. There's also a vast array of resources available online around the topic of business as mission. I was just doing some searching today. Here's one to check out that I could recommend. BusinessAsMissionNetwork.com. That's BusinessAsMissionNetwork.com. And we'll put a link up on our show page as well. But there's a great deal of resources just on that one site alone for helping you think about how business can be used as a platform to share faith. BusinessAsMissionNetwork.com. Now, coming up tomorrow on Connecting Faith, we'll talk about the business of social media and its influence in our lives, for good or not so good. The question is your social media life overrunning your social life? Is there a faith perspective to using new media? Youth director and recovering social media junkie Kyle Tennant talks about his experiences and offers a 3-day plan to detox, discern, and decide about how we use this pervasive technology. Tennant says it may be time to unfriend yourself
and he's written about it in a new book. You'll want to weigh in on the conversation tomorrow on Connecting Faith. By the way, if you're looking for a way to engage with friends around a great day of ministry, I want to encourage you to check out the Set Apart Conference coming to the campus of Northwestern College next month. It's March 2nd and 3rd. This is an annual event for women all across the Faith Radio Network, and it provides a setting to grow in your faith and to reconnect with friends and hear inspiring messages of God's faithfulness. With keynote speakers this year, Ruth Graham and Susie Larson. You can go to nwc.edu/setapart for all the details about these two great days coming up. That's nwc.edu/setapart to hear from Ruth Graham and Susie Larson. And speaking of Susie, today on Live the Promise, Gary Hoag returns to the studio to talk about stewardship and generosity. Gary is the generosity monk, and we'll learn how to treasure Christ above all things. That's later this afternoon at 3 here on the Faith Radio Network. Thanks for listening in to Connecting Faith. I'm Neil Stavem. Have a great afternoon.